Well, hello, and welcome to the ADA Shop Talk Podcast. I'm your host, Paul Klein. And if you are an ADA coordinator, government official, architect, or accessibility specialist trying to better understand the ADA and all of the requirements, then you are in the right place. The ADA Shop Talk Podcast is brought to you by Blue Dag. Check out Blue Dag's Transition Plan Builder and Inspection Suite over at bluedag.com for all the great solutions over there. And we're happy to give you a demo. If you're remotely interested, contact me or the team and we'll get you taken care of. So, thanks for tuning in last week. A little personal riff about my trip. I zoomed up to Detroit. I'm now recording this on the following Tuesday, the 2nd. So that's the nice thing about these solo episodes is you kind of get week by week, day by day, check in with old Paul here. But I still want to hear from you if you prefer the solo episodes or the guests. So thank you to Kevin Enos for responding and letting me know his thoughts. And also had topic advice and working on that, Kevin. So got a great guest that's going to come in and talk about the CASP exam and what you need to do to study and all those good things. So look for that coming out. But yeah, if you just share with me in the community, direct message me there or shoot me an email at pklein@bluedag.com and let me know which you prefer. You know, I can go either way. So we'll see what happens. So I'm just looking for some feedback. So that's always helpful. But so last Tuesday, I had said, okay, I'm flying out last Wednesday. So I went to Detroit, got my survey done. Everything was great. Came back, used my Blue Dag app, went smooth. And then lo and behold, on Thursday, as I'm putting the report together, I get an email. Hey, we got another one in Detroit. It's like, so now tomorrow I get to fly back to Detroit. And I just missed it by one day. But that's the ebbs and flows of being a private consultant. You kind of have to, when the client says jump, you say how high. As opposed to when I was working for local government, you just kind of, okay, we'll get to it when we get to it. But that doesn't work in the real world. So yeah, I get to fly back to Detroit tomorrow morning, Wednesday, April 3rd. I could have saved a flight and another rental car and made a lot more profitable margin on two surveys. That's the magic, is flying in and being able to do multiple sites. Because, you know, you pay for your travel and, you know, all your expenses, you know, it compounds the more sites you can do. So, but it is what it is. You take the good ones with the great ones. And sometimes I get, you know, 20, 30 sites in what we call a DMA, domestic market area, I think that is, you know. So sometimes it's one, sometimes it's 20, sometimes it's five, you know. So, but that's the art of being a consultant and so forth. So little update this week on that. This week I want to talk about accessible and adaptable dwelling units. So this has to do in terms of housing. Okay. So if you don't deal with housing a lot, and this is one of my pet peeves. So this is kind of a Paul rant today. And my, you know, experience of teaching this for, I don't know, many years, 20 something years, and it helps me keep the regulations and the requirements in my mind straight. And so, you know, terms are important. So that's why we have a definitions chapter in the ADAS and in the Fair Housing Act and 11A, 11B, the Texas Code, the Florida Code, all of them, the IBC, the ANSI, all have definitions because terms are important. And if you don't have the proper terms, you know, qualified in your mind, it can mean different things to different people. And the notorious one is when it comes to housing, you know, architects, code officials, accessibility specialists, inspectors, owners, housing advocates, everybody says, how many accessible units do I need to have for my apartment complex? And it's like, well, it depends. There's not enough information, but you know, it's, or in the parking lot, you hear people say, how many ADA units or how many ADA stalls do I need? Or worse yet, how many handicap? That's a horrible term that we don't advocate. try to remove that from your vocabulary as a specialist. It's just a old school kind of derogatory term in some circles. And so it's just better to avoid it. And so I switch that term out with accessible or sometimes ADA, but anyway, where I'm going with this is when it comes to housing, okay, when you're trying to figure out the requirements for housing specifically, it comes down to two different kind of codes or regulations. It's either going to be public housing or it's going to be private housing. Okay. And then once, and what that means is that public housing is a housing facility that's being built on for or behalf of a public entity, or it has some sort of federal 504, you know, federal funding of some sort, you know, could be through HUD or Housing for Vets or something like that, but it has some kind of federal financial component to it. And that's where it gets real complicated. But for the basic premise, it's either public housing or private housing. Now, private housing, super easy. That's your common multifamily apartments, you know, where you've got four apartments or more. In California, it's three or more, but basically multifamily, multiple dwelling units, and under one roof, you know, so an apartment complex. So an eightplex or a, you know, 100-unit apartment complex, all under one roof, no property lines, even if they have like condos or condo types, type scenarios where the owner actually can buy the paint or the airspace, and then the building is in some kind of, you know, formal ownership. That's more of a condo thing, but that's still subject to the Fair Housing Act. And that's where I'm going with for. So private multifamily apartments, or what we call multifamily, that's going to be subject to the Fair Housing Act. And then there's state requirements. Like in California, you have 11A. And in a lot of states, you have the ANSI that has the different unit types that kind of run in parallel with the requirements of the Fair Housing Act. But to keep it simple, we're going to talk about the Fair Housing Act and the 2010 ADAS for public housing. And that's what it comes down to. First question, do you have public housing or do you have private? If it's being constructed for or on behalf of a public entity, that could be a city or county, a state housing program, homeless shelters, housing for the veterans, low income housing is typical for those types of things. Those are all typically going to fall under public housing. And then for private, you know, Del Webb's building a 100-unit apartment complex. It's on a private development. There's no tax credits. There's no funding from the feds. There's no incentive from the state or anything like that. It's just a private development. That's going to follow the Fair Housing Act and the Fair Housing Act guidelines. And that's how I keep all of this in my mind intact, because you can't just say, well, how many ADA units? Well, first off, ADA is the Americans with Disabilities Act. And that, if you're building a new public housing project, you're not going to follow specifically the ADA or the law. You are, but you're going to follow it via the standards. You got to build that building to the 2010 Americans with Disability Act standards. And in that standard, it says that you have to have a certain number of mobility units and a certain number of communication units. Okay. And that's what it's talking about. So even if when someone says, oh, how many ADA units do I need for my public housing project? It doesn't compute. It makes no sense. It's the incorrect term. And so I always ask, well, how many, first off, it is public housing. Okay, well, then you need to have 5% mobility units and you need to have 2% communication units. And then there's some dispersion requirements and so forth that come along with public housing. And so that's all in, I believe that's in 233 in the scoping section in the 2010 ADAS. So in the residential, you know, provisions, you'll see that. So when it comes to public housing, you can't say how many ADA units I have. You got to say how, and you can't even say how many accessible units I have. You have to say how many mobility units do I have and how many communication units I have. That's where you start for public housing. Now, conversely, if it is a true private multifamily apartment complex, let's say it's 100 units and it's subject to the Fair Housing Act, now we're going to be talking about how many units are adaptable. And that's the line in the sand for me in terms, because when you start applying the adaptability provisions in a multifamily project where you're applying the Fair Housing Act, there's elements of adaptability, not full on accessibility. In other words, there's a higher level or a higher degree of obligation and access for public housing because it's encompassing public dollars. Think about that. It's using tax dollars, credits, funding from the public. So therefore, it needs to provide a greater degree of access to the greatest number of people with the greatest number of disabilities. Therefore, a higher threshold, i.e. mobility units and communication units, which you won't find that in the Fair Housing Act. If it's just a private multifamily 100-unit apartment complex, you're going to determine how many units are on the ground floor or on an accessible route, i.e. Accessed via an elevator, ramp, or the ground floor by virtue of just being on grade, then all those units have to be adaptable. There's no calculation. There's no 5%, 2%, or any of that stuff for private. It's just, and what adaptability is, it's more about usability and adaptability, meaning that the apartment or the unit can be modified or changed to meet a person's specific disability. Think about that. They're going to be living there for a long time. So if they need a grab bar or a fold down grab bar at the toilet, you know, something specific for them, or maybe the carpet's too high pile, so they want linoleum throughout because they have a really severe spinal injury and the carpet, just going over the carpet, is just too hard. So they want linoleum. They can make a reasonable modification or a reasonable accommodation request and get those things changed, you know, breakaway cabinets at the sink in the kitchen and the lab in the bathroom and so forth. And so that's where that adaptability comes in. And so in my mind, adaptability applies to covered multifamily dwellings subject to the Fair Housing Act for private entities and developments and construction and so forth. And there's no public component related to the fed, state, or local. When we talk about accessible units, we're really talking about mobility units and communications units in relation to public housing. And so there you want to go to the 2080 AS, look at your 233, 5%, 2%, and follow those provisions for public housing. And so that's the difference between adaptable and accessible. I don't like to use accessible. I'll just say how many mobility units you have to have, how many communications units you have to have, and how many adaptable. And here's why. Because once you have a public housing project, this is where it gets a little bit more complicated, that technically, or not technically, the governing document is the 80 AS. You follow your 5% and your 2%, but by definition, that building is still a covered multifamily dwelling and is required to meet the adaptability provisions of the Fair Housing Act. And so what's happened over the years in a lot of cases is that people would say, oh, it's public housing. I meet my 5%, 2%. So let's do the real math. Let's say you have a 100-unit apartment complex. It's public housing. 5% would be 5 units would meet mobility. The rest, the other 95, would have no accessibility requirements in them because they would be exempt. You meet your 5%, i.e. 5, and then two units could be the same two. It could be two of the mobility units or two of the non-mobility units. It doesn't matter under the 2010 ADAS. And you could, then you theoretically would just ignore the rest of the other 95 units. But if you look at the advisory in the 2010, it says, hey, you still may be subject to the Fair Housing Act, which is totally the case because by definition, it's still a covered multifamily dwelling. And so now adaptability. And that's what California, and I hate talking about California, especially for those of you that are listening outside of California, but what they have done, which, and ANSI has done that to some extent too, is they have both. So if you have a building that's subject to both, you pick up the mobility and the communications by virtue of being public housing, and you also pick up the adaptability, which is also required by the Fair Housing Act. So public housing is that really unique, complex, challenging, multiple regulations apply to it kind of facility. And that's why it's hard to understand sometimes, but having taught this for so many years, it's kind of actually easy now for me, easy for me to say, right? That's what you're saying. But no, and that's how I keep it in my mind. I say, okay, what type of housing facility are we talking about? Public or private? Okay, you're public. Let's go 5%, 2% per the 2010 ADAS. Okay, it's still by definition a covered multifamily dwelling. Now I got to apply my adaptability to all the remaining units that are on the ground floor or on an accessible route. And then I'm money. And that's how I keep that in mind. And I don't call them accessible units because I don't know if you're talking about adaptable units per the Fair Housing Act or if you're talking about the mobility units per the ADAS or maybe the communication units per the ADAS. So so that is my 15-20 minute rant here on accessible versus adaptable. What's the difference? And so if you can keep that in your mind when you get that project and comes across your counter or for your city, if you're a ADA coordinator and you're trying to figure out all these different requirements, that's the first question to ask. Is this a public housing facility? If it is, go to the 2010 ADAS. 233, I believe it is, and you're essentially going to apply the 5% and the 2%, 5% mobility and 2% adaptable. I'm sorry, 5% mobility, 2% communications, and then any remaining units will need to meet the adaptability provisions of the Fair Housing Act, or ANSI. If you get into ANSI, I believe they are. I think that's one of the reasons ANSI, I think, does call them. I can't remember if they call them accessible units, but they have a similar layout. There's like three or four. One, and the ANSI also has transient kind of all linked in. That's why ANSI can get kind of confusing sometime. But that's essentially it's all cored on that federal requirement of the 5%, 2% for public housing, and then the adaptability provisions of the Fair Housing Act. So if you can keep that in your mind and not, you can get away from the term of accessible units or ADA units and think of how many mobility units, how many communication units, and how many adaptable units, it'll keep the regulations straight. And then when you start to pile on the local requirements, either by via ANSI or CBC, or I think up in Minnesota, there's a Minnesota Accessibility Code. Out in Florida, they have some provisions in the Florida code as well. I'm sure there's some others. Then you can kind of pile that on top of that base federal requirement. So I hope that helps. A little technical tip for you, if you will. One of the areas that I like to teach is housing because it's such a monster. And it's confusing to a lot of people, but hopefully that helps you out, gives you some clarity, maybe help you out and so forth. I think we'll be doing a Blue Dag free webinar on public housing and probably on private too coming up. So tune into that. And hey, if you haven't joined the ADA Shop Talk community, that's where we do all these free webinars and so forth. And go over to the ADA Shop Talk community at adashoptalk.com, and you can register for all the webinars and look at the replays we post in there and get some free CEUs and all that good stuff. But the April webinar coming up is going to be Disability Etiquette and Best Practices for Customer Service Representatives. It's going to be on April 24th. And I'll actually be coming to you remotely from, I'll be in California that day. And we'll be, I don't know if I'll be in a hotel or a conference room or in my rental car, but I'll be ready to go and presenting that day. It's 11 a.m. to 12 noon Pacific time on April 24th. Both Victor and I will be doing that. It's free. You can register again over at the ADA Shop Talk community. And also subscribe to this podcast on your favorite podcast player, iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, all that stuff. It's great to see the number of downloads and episodes rising each week. It means you're listening and enjoying the show and appreciate the support. And again, email me or message me in the ADA Shop Talk pod or community if you've got any great topics or guests I should have. And hey, go out there and rock your ADA efforts. And remember, let's work together to create a world where everyone has the opportunity to thrive. That's it for this week. Have a great rest of your week. And take care and be safe out there. And we will talk to you soon. Bye-bye.